And we are going to be inside talking about ethical dilemmas. We're going to continue this morning. We started a series called Our World. And this series has been designed to talk about the really tough topics that we face in our daily lives, how to make decisions, how to integrate faith into our lives when we face tough choices. And we're going to continue making our way because really, these tough topics impact our lives, our personal lives, our communal lives together. And so, through this series, we're going to try to integrate theological reflection with our relationships, our daily living, faithful living, and try to how to integrate these four values into our lives. So, before we jump into our conversation today, just a couple of reminders. We have discussion with one another that we're going to treat each other as children of God. That we're going to try to speak with five statements. We're going to ask clarifying questions if there's one that we don't understand. We're going to try to create a safe space this morning for having a tough conversation on a tough topic. And we're going to be mindful that there is going to be a diversity of opinions in the room. We're going to create some space to listen to those opinions, because we're going to value people over opinions. So, just a brief overview of the upcoming topics, because I think you will want to be here as we have these conversations. Next week, we're going to be talking about anxiety. The following week is personal and social entitlement, followed by the opioid crisis, and then we're going to conclude this series with a conversation about race. So this morning, our topic is about ethical in business and medicine. So we're going to start out by defining what is an ethical dilemma. Oh, I forgot about the microphone.
Really close. Your microphone or ours?
I'm breathing. There, is that better? Okay. So their microphone. So we're going to, Alyssa's going to be coming around and capturing something as well. So they're going to be coming around with a microphone. So if you have something to say, we're going to ask that you patiently wait for the microphone for either Kathy or Alyssa to arrive to you. Because it does a couple of things. One is by speaking into the microphone, everyone will be able to hear you. And it will also create some space in between our speakers so that we can sit a little bit with what we hear. We invited the Holy Spirit in those spaces. So what is an ethical dilemma? What is an ethical dilemma? Is that anything that you've ever thought about? How would you define an ethical dilemma? Jeff?
I think it's when there are multiple choices that all seem reasonable to take, and you can't decide which way to go.
Yeah. What is an ethical dilemma?
I think a lot of times it's something that hits you as a paradox. When you have two things that are absolutely equally true, but they contradict one another, then that's enough.
Exactly. Dave?
In my experience, usually it's coupled with which either way you go, whether you offend or alienate, etc., one of the people makes it more complicated.
Exactly. So those are all the aspects of ethical dilemmas. An ethical dilemma occurs when an individual must choose between two unfavorable alternatives. An ethical dilemma usually has no perfect solution. And those making the decision may find themselves in a position to have to defend the decisions that they make. Because there is no perfect solution. Somewhere, someone is going to get hurt. And then the choice that is made is between competing values. It's a paradox. It could be between competing values, rights, and goals. Yes, Marcy?
And I think there's one other aspect of it. And that's the rationale that one utilizes to make that choice.
Exactly. So that rationale would come with the defense of why they're making the choice and being open to hearing what the options were and the process of thinking through the choice that's made.
Anything else to add to this definition?
So, ethical dilemmas are unavoidable. We face them in our personal lives and in our professional lives. We're also faced with making tough decisions when there's no clear right or wrong answer. And sometimes it's just simply making a choice for the best possible outcome, facing difficult circumstances, knowing that someone else might be let down. And so this morning we're specifically going to discuss these difficult decisions and dilemmas in terms of medicine and business practices. So I thought we could start with a movie clip from the film Dallas Buyers Club. Has anyone seen the film? Yes. Excellent. So let's watch this together.
As a retirement community, he was originally developed as a treatment for cancer. With the onset of HIV, the Avenex Industries began a trial in which we administered ATP to affected lab animals. Initial findings suggested that we received 4 counts of stored T cell immunity,
but also in case that there were some troubling side effects with the animals. That's a significant decrease in the red white blood cells of the animals.
Yes, but it's a type of virus that maybe has to test.
Before we even developed the cancer treatment ourselves, due to lack of anti-cancer efficacy and toxicity.
Right. Well, we believe those problems with those issues.
So you didn't have to do that study.
Actually, the FDA's given us permission to create human drugs, which is what raised me here. We're conducting a double-blind placebo-controlled randomized trial throughout the United States. Yeah, so much is one of the first things.
How long have you seen the job over here?
I don't know if that's correct, but then a year. During which time in the hospital and its administering physicians will be very well compensated for their efforts. Sadly, this crisis will only get worse before it gets better, and I know I'll speak for everyone that I understand and say this is a new opportunity. Chance to be on the board by finding a cure.
Do you know that you're just really crazy to get stuck
in that case?
What do you know about your
situation? I've been farmer for about 5 years. And like it or not, it's our business.
It's like the other
issue. But that's what you got out of it. Anyone else out there?
The film Dallas Buyers Club tells the story of Ron Porter, who is an AIDS patient who was diagnosed in the 1980s when AIDS and HIV treatments were under-researched and there was a lot of stigma against the disease. So the film tells Ron's story that Ron is not ever a guy that I would ever have a relationship with. I mean, he's a radio guy. He is this straight Texas rough and tough drug addict. He is a womanizer, he's pretty stereotypical bigot, and yet he finds himself landed in a hospital because he's dying of AIDS. And he's given 30 days to live. What would you do if you only had 30 days left to live? Ron's like, I'm gonna go with a bitch, a party bitch. And he eventually lands himself in the hospital again. That's when it changed his life. Ron decides he is going to research AIDS and HIV and figure out how he is going to get the treatment that he needs. And darn it, he's going to live more than 90 days. So this film talks about this medical dilemma because he's refused AZT and he's refused participation in this clinical trial because of his lifestyle. And he can't get AZT, so then he hustles. He hustles one of the janitors to get the AZT that he needs, but then the janitor is not because they finally lock up the AZT, but the AZT is killing him, right? Because they don't know what the results are. So what does he do? He goes to Mexico and he starts hustling again. He starts flying all over the world because he finds that if he can work outside the law, if he can work outside the regulations of the Federal Drug Administration, He can find treatments that actually help people who are suffering from HIV and AIDS. He gets resistance. He gets resistance from government officials. He gets resistance from his friends. He loses his friends, he loses his job, so when they do, he sets up the Dallas Fires Club. So he figures out that if he creates a club, he can get the drugs to the people that he needs. This guy's a hustler. So how do we make sense of this ethical dilemma? Can you see all the different layers that are involved here? There is HIV/AIDS treatment. There are these doctors at this hospital that want to treat their patients. There are the pharmaceutical representatives that understand that there is a bottom line. And then there are these people who are ostracized from their family and friends. They lose their job, they lose everything, and all they want is not to suffer and to know that there is some kind of hope in their life to get treatment for HIV and AIDS. How do we make sense out of this ethical dilemma? Have you ever been in a position, or a friend in a position, where you suddenly receive a diagnosis and you have to make a choice between medicine or bankruptcy? Have you ever been faced with a choice because your prescription benefit is running out? And can you understand where the bottom line comes in and how we make sense out of the system that provides medicine and healthcare in the best way possible? And sometimes it means making tough choices for patients. How do we make sense of this? Dave.
I think the story of Jesus walking through the field on the Sabbath, and they get something to eat, and they criticize the Pharisees for working on the Sabbath. That whole story. And then he kind of rebukes the Pharisees, etc. And so that's what I was thinking of when you were giving out the options, that it's a hierarchy of values sometimes. And like living maybe is higher than following the FDA.
Kathy? That reminds me of something that I've heard some Jewish friends, like associates, they say there's all these rules and all these laws, but saving other life supersedes everything. And I believe that. You're making that an ethical decision has to do with life. I believe that to be true.
Jim? What is quality of life, and how do we make sense of suffering? Let's see.
I think one of the answers is to keep working. Since, since the ladies and everything, it really hit my dance community, but lots of my friends died because of AIDS. And back then, the rules were much more extreme than, in fact, you just about want to change, where if you're in a life and death situation, you can go ahead and try medicine outside of the FDA's. And I think, in part, that's the answer to some of these ethical things, is to realize that they do exist, and that we need to keep looking at the situation and see if we can't step by step and improve it. You know, if it's good enough with drug trials and all that other kind of stuff, there's great reasons for the FDA to exist. But on the other hand, we need to keep looking at those laws. And like the whole border thing right now, we need to keep looking at these laws and see how can we make it better, not just make it so it stays for the way it is.
Well, when we think about these problems, I think we have a tendency to deal with the symptoms rather than the cause. There's some, we need to get to the root cause of the problems. And getting to the root cause, or in most instances, is very uncomfortable because we're looking at things that people do that they should not do to begin with. And it doesn't matter if it's AIDS or immigration or all the whole host of problems that we're talking about today. The other day we were having a discussion with some people. We were trying to define grace. So, before I went to this meeting, I happened to be reading Dietrich Bonhoeffer's book. And fortunately, I read his treatise on King Grace. And I couldn't help but think about all the whole host of problems that we're having. Perhaps Dietrich Bonhoeffer had the answer, and I think it's cheap grace. Because there's cheap grace and there's costly grace. So, but I'm not in a position to discuss Bonhoeffer's cheap grace.
Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a pastor in Germany. And he was a part of, and I can't think of the, he was part of what was called the Confessing Church. And he was part of a movement that resisted the Nazi regime in the 1930s. He worked actively to bring justice, to call attention to the unjust system that the Nazis had set up. And he staked his very life on preaching the gospel and the good news of Jesus and grace, talk about costly grace. He was a part of a plot to assassinate, take out Hitler, and he landed him in. And he was Catholic, right? And so his conviction of Hitler and the atrocities that Hitler was committing against humanity, he put himself in an ethical dilemma, and he committed himself to taking Hitler out of power. By doing so, it landed him in a concentration camp. He was first in prisons, and then he was in a concentration camp. I believe he was at Birkenau, which you have to look at. And it cost him his life. That is costly grace. He saved his very life and committed himself to the well-being of human beings and preaching and living the love of God in such a way that he saved his life on. And it was about social justice. It was about loving relationships. It was about valuing humanity. And then when Jack talks about the cost of grace, that's what we're talking about. Linda?
So, you took some of the words right out of my mouth in terms of economic justice and social justice. I find today that we have to make a lot more decisions based on our beliefs and economic justice and social justice. And I think about, so when I was diagnosed with cancer many years ago, and the first thing my oncologist said was, what kind of insurance do we have? And I think about that to this day, because I work with a lot of people who don't have insurance, who don't have medical care. And I think I'm alive today because I did have one of the type of insurance that I had. And I was able to get the medical treatment that I needed. But I think about all the people who die because they don't have access to medical treatment. And when I think about the medical dilemmas that are in place and injustice, I think we're finding ourselves more and more in that situation today. I don't want to say it's coming to a head, but I think politically it's causing more and more people to make decisions about economic and social justice. And it's really bringing our values to the forefront in terms of what we believe in.
In the Reformed tradition, we ground those values in Scripture. And I'd like us to read together an excerpt from the first letter to the Corinthians that Paul wrote. It's 6 chapters, it's verses 7 to 12. And I think it also goes back to what you were saying, which I think you were saying. So let's read this together. These court cases are an ugly blot on your community. Wouldn't it be far better just to take it, to let yourselves be wrong and forget it? All you're doing is providing fuel for more wrong, more injustice, bringing more hurt to the people of your own spiritual family. Don't you realize that this is not the way to live? Unjust people who don't care about God will not be joined in His kingdom. Those abuse and abuse each other, use and abuse sex, use and abuse the earth and everything in it, don't qualify as citizens of God's kingdom. A number of you know from experience what I'm talking about. For not so long ago, you were on that list. Since then, you've been cleaned up and given a fresh start by Jesus, our Master, our Messiah, and by our God, Christ within us, the Spirit. Just because something is technically legal doesn't mean that it's spiritually appropriate. If I were around doing whatever I thought I could get away with, I'd be a slave to my parents. This, I think, is what Jack is talking about the tough decisions. So when Paul was writing this to the church in Corinth, this was a church that was in conflict. And it was in conflict over a number of different issues. And there were some that were taking advantage of others within the community of believers. So they're having these issues around social justice, around economic, and about how they are living together in the community. And Paul realized that none of us makes decisions in a vacuum. That the decisions that we make and how we're going to live our lives make an impact on other people and the well-being of others. And so he's discouraging the community from going around and doing things doing like whatever you want to do because you think it's right, and encouraging people to think about how we're living together in community. Because if you just live as a slave to your own whims, right, you're a slave to your own ego. It's like your ego all over the place, right? And he's saying that these are constructive ways to live. So he says that this leads to a need for awareness, a need for self-awareness for how we're relating together in community and resolving conflicts, talking about disputes and ethical dilemmas, and we need to be aware of the competing rights and values and goals that go into our decision making as God's people. I'm aware of the time this morning. I designed for us to talk about a couple more ethical dilemmas, and one I'm just going to briefly talk about this morning, which is the question about immigration. And I thought I would raise that issue in light of this passage and in light of the conversation in the media that's been happening over the last week relating to families that are being torn apart at the detention center in Texas. And it was interesting to me that the Attorney General decided to quote from Romans chapter 9. Right. And it's interesting to me that they're quoting the Bible about the law and upholding the law. And I think the law is important. But I think it goes back to, again, I can't remember who said it this morning. Who are we going to value? Are we going to value the law over people? And how do we negotiate this? Right? Because there's a lot that goes into this discussion. And I'm afraid afraid if I start unpacking that question, it's true. We could be here for a very long time. But I want to encourage you to listen to voices and to think about and reflect on Scripture. What are those competing values? How can we have a public discourse in a society that values people? How can we discern out what are the competing values so that we can have a conversation that can bridge our political divide and that we can also be caring for the sanctity of human life? I just opened up a great door and I was like, and I recognize that. Maybe we can continue to talk about that in other ways. But hopefully we can have productive conversation. Because the reality is that we all have a set of values, and understanding where our values come from is important. I can speak for myself. I discern enough from Jesus' teachings in the Beatitudes and on the Sermon on the Mount. To go back to our previous series that we worked through together as a community, valuing the poor, embracing humility, embracing peacemaking. All of these teachings that Jesus told in the Sermon on the Mount, those are the values that I put above and against other values. So for me, that is how I honor life. That for the people over the law. So that's the question. What are your four values that help you determine your decision making in your personal life and in your professional life? Are they kingdom values? Maybe they're the bottom four values: balance, creativity, love, hope, all neighbors, safe place, so that we can proclaim that love wins. But take some time and think about that. What are your four values, and how will your four values help you in having conversations that matter? And I'm just going to bring it back to Ron Woodruff, because he's, you know, when you meet someone, even if it's on film, and they kind of put like salt in a room, and you're like, this guy, it's not a guy that I like. And yet, he's teaching me something, and I appreciate this. Like watching this film, the Dallas Buyers Club taught me something about him. No matter who you are, we have the capacity to value human life. And he did that by easing the suffering of other AIDS patients. So I'm going to just leave you with questions. What are the values that you are willing to stake your life on?
On Friday, a 96-year-old woman named Mary died from with her daughter by the side of the mirror. Mary is the mom of a dear friend of mine, who I have known for 50 years probably. And I went to meet with Mary on Monday while she was dying. And she had many conversations with her about being in this earthquake, and she didn't understand why she was just hanging on and hanging on. And I had a rare and rich opportunity to sit there and hold her hand and pray with her and my friend Monica and her niece. And we prayed the circle. And I asked God to please take her as soon as possible because Mary wanted to go. And listening to you talk today, Joe,